The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
I'm just going to wait it out. I'll wait till you guys tire yourselves out, fall asleep, beyond, a little nap.
Here's the thing. Beyond, every time I do this, it's with somebody who has even more energy than the last time. So we don't die, we multiply.
That's true.
So you're like the sun. You're just going to keep getting hotter until you explode and turn into an old rock.
Or you die from
I've never read anything about the sun. I don't know how it works.
I'm well on my way to just a red giant already. I'm just
you look good. You're wearing blue today.
You know, you do bear a striking resemblance to the baby that played the sun on Teletubbies.
Oh, there. Ooh, that is a little frightening.
But if that baby had a beard.
Max, what is the show and what are our names?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 413? 14? Yeah. I don't know. I was absent last week.
I'm a little bit out of gone.
My name is Max Scoville. If this is your first time listening to the show, I'm sorry. I just got back from vacation. Joining me is Mr. Brian Altano. You just got back from New York where
you were
traveling about.
Rap, rap.
And with us is the lovely Jared Petty, who... Where have you been?
I just got back from nowhere. I've been here.
Good,
I've been here for a long time.
All right. And, well, this is, in theory, a PlayStation podcast, but we also talk about living and being alive, you know.
We talk about the sun, the Teletubbies. Disturbing creatures.
If you tuned in last week, you caught Andrew Goldfarb and Marty Sliva talking to Callie Plagey and Miranda Sanchez about anime and games. They did a big crossover thing, which some people loved and some people didn't love, but, you know.
Just like anime and games.
Just like everything.
We may discuss anything here except midichlorians. I think that's off the
table.
That's fair.
Off the table.
That's fair. Okay. I have a different podcast that's just about midichlorians.
Oh, the midichlorian podcast?
Yeah, I record it onto cassette tapes and then hide them in the wall of my house.
We're giving a cassette tape away. It's very exciting.
All right.
Yeah. Good to know. It's a mixtape.
Weird.
He's going to be on it.
That's okay. Right. Yeah. All right. Anyway, we do have some news. Marty's not here, so we can talk about this. There's going to be a game about a dog. Marty's allergic to dogs.
That's right.
That's why he's not here, because we're talking about it.
Yeah. This is on Kickstarter. It's a game. It's called... Home Free, and it's a procedurally generated game about being a dog, which is like, a lot of people think that's dumb, but I think it's kind of great because, as I've said before, I wake up every day and I'm a human man, and that's the majority of what you play as in video games, so it's kind of nice to get something new here and there.
Now, are you like boy and his dog, or are you like just ordinary everyday dog?
I think you're vaguely like kind of low poly looking dog, like you're sort of... Very, very stylized dog.
But it's like day in the park. It's not like post-apocalyptic world or anything like that.
I think you're maybe trying to find your way home, but like, you know, it's a neat idea. That's coming to PS4.
So you're trying to find your way home in a procedurally generated game where you're lost. That sounds like a nightmare. Think about that. Like you're trying to get home from somewhere, but everything around you keeps changing.
That's actually every roguelike I've ever played. That sounds awesome. I'm totally sold for that.
I think there's a challenge where any game sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like there's all these objectives. There's no video game where you sit on a couch and don't do anything. Like there's
Beavis and Butthead the game.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But even those, you had to go and get GWAR tickets, you know, and then kids with skateboards would keep hitting you and you'd slip on stuff.
Maybe you have the Jabba the Hutt game where you just play his job and you just sit on your big slab all day and pronounce your judgments.
Okay. At one point, he had to get on a plane and go to that airplane hangar so that Han Solo could step on his tail.
He did have to do that.
Which is weird. I kind of want to see that. They never showed that part where they're like, Jabba, we got to get it. Okay. Well, enough about that.
All right.
So, this is a game about a dog. Yeah. And so,
is this the top news story?
It's a slow news week. We're getting off on the wrong foot real bad.
No, I love this idea of the enemies like mailmen and fire hydrants.
I don't know.
Cars that run over you.
It's pretty early on. This is slated for a November 2016 release. I love that we're at that point of the year where all the games we've been looking forward to all year haven't quite come out yet.
Yeah.
We're getting announcements about what's coming a year from now.
Yeah.
You know.
No, this is that very weird calm before the storm. I was talking to Dan Stapleton before about cool games we wanted to do. Let's play it. And I'm like, what's the big games that were released this week, Dan? Because I got back from Comic-Con. I haven't looked at the schedule. And he was like, nothing. I mean, he did it in his voice. He was like, oh, nothing.
Just that.
There's nothing really coming out.
It's good because it gives us more time to talk about dog games and
dog
facts.
This is totally the calm before the storm. If you had anything that you wanted to play this year that you've been putting off, head on over to your Redbox or Blockbuster Video or Video USA was the weird one in my old town.
Oh, Video USA. What about the – did you ever go to rent games at the Farmore or the Kroger or any of that? Oh, yeah. See, all the grocery stores and stuff had that.
Oh, okay. No. So when I was a kid, you could rent –
Baromir's brother?
I don't know.
Actually, Faramir. Yeah, that is –
what you should have said was supermarket. I don't know what your weird – whatever those things were.
Oh, this is just Southeastern chains.
You used to be able to rent games from supermarkets, but they were – this is kind of before – this was like NES era. Yeah. It wasn't really PlayStation games yet, but if it was PlayStation games, you would have Uncharted, and it would just be like they would have cut out half a picture of Harrison Ford from Indiana Jones.
And stuck it on there.
It would have said Uncharted and Sharpie on the top, and in the back there would have been a picture of a cartoon professor holding a wand and three bullet points next to it, and it would be jump on the rocks, climb the trees, bite the baddies.
Because you couldn't copy the manuals legally.
Yeah, so they couldn't use any art.
Right.
No, it's interesting you say that. So anyway, this is the quiet time. Yeah. If there's games you need to catch up on, we've all said our games of the year so far. Mine are probably Metal Gear and Bloodborne and others. Max, you really love Metal Gear and The Witcher. Mm-hmm. Jared, where are you at?
I haven't decided. I'm leaning toward Mario Maker right now.
Yeah,
which is
great game.
Kind of eating my life. I've also really enjoyed Metal Gear 5.
Yep.
Those are the two that I'd probably cling on. But I still need to go back and really dive into Bloodborne.
Bloodborne, Witcher, and Metal Gear are three of the best games this year, and they're also three of the sort of biggest. So probably pick one or two of those and finish them before every other game comes out this fall, because they are coming.
Games are real big. We talked about this a lot this year. It's kind of been a running theme, but it's also it seems like open world is almost the standard for this generation.
Yeah.
Yep. And procedurally generated dog
simulations.
Which
is terrifying, because that means it just never ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where it just threatens you to... You've got to get tired of it before it gets tired of you.
That was the second Elder Scrolls game kind of operated on that principle. Daggerfall, it was the biggest Elder Scrolls game ever made, but that was because it was procedurally generated environments.
Yeah.
So it was this giant Britain that went on in a weird repetitive pattern of randomly generated towns forever.
It's really terrifying. It's like having amnesia and walking around and not recognizing anything, but having things that are sort of understandable.
That's kind of how I feel all the time.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
You should get that checked out.
Yeah.
IGN is in the middle of doing a top 100 games of all time ever.
You know, easy undertaking.
Yeah, that wasn't difficult.
Very simple to do. That didn't involve any arguing at all in this company.
There were not four or five scheduled meetings after filling out questionnaires with hundreds of games
on them. I say this all the time, but people leave comments on these top 100s that we do, or top 10s, top 50s, whatever. And not just us, any site that ranks anything. And people are like, oh, you're wrong, this isn't this, and they scream and yell. And they forget we're the comment section live on the fly while these things are happening. They put a bunch of us in a room, they order some pizza, and we scream and yell at each other. And I get up and I look friends of mine, close friends of mine, dead in the face, and I'm like, you are an idiot. You are wrong. You're an idiot. Tony Hawk is not better than Vice City.
The weirdest one for me is that Sam would not sit down in any of those meetings. You remember that?
Sam Claiborne.
Yeah, he just stood the whole time.
No,
he wasn't aggressive. But for some reason, in those particular meetings,
he's like the what do you call that? The guy in a jury who has to corral everybody.
Yeah, the judge, the head juror,
the one who goes up and they're like, "We find the defendant guilty," and everyone's like, I mean, we voted on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We picked you to go up and give the class presentation.
But we didn't just go in a room. I mean, it was like a Manhattan Project. We all had to fill out, you know, we're like, hey, what are your top 100 games? Mm-hmm. We wrote that out. And then we cross-referenced that with a bunch of other lists of games and databases about games to make sure we hadn't missed anything that we might want to think about. Because even when you have, you know, 20 or 30 people doing this and putting it all together, and then we come up with this giant uber list.
The weird thing I've noticed over the last few years is, you know, so we have Tal Blevins. He's he's a publisher here, like basically VP, and he's been at IGN for 17 years. And every time we get to the end of one of these lists, we're like, we have a really good list. We send it out to him and some of the other old guards here, and they're like, hey, that's a real good list, but you forgot. And they name like Baldur's Gate for the you know, and if they name a game from like 30 years ago that none of us even had any reference to, that they maybe remade on iPhone or something like that.
You forgot Poliwog 2.
I'm kind of one of those old codgers.
Search for the bot.
I feel like that's.
You're totally.
Derelict Canyon? How can you have a list of canyons without Derelict Canyon?
Exactly.
Jared, you're like a total encyclopedia with this stuff. No. What was this process like for you, ranking the top 100 games of all time? Were you a stick in the spokes, or were you greasing the wheels?
I tried to grease the wheels. I felt like, I like a good greasy wheel.
don't say greasy.
What's wrong with a greasy stick? Just a little bit of both.
Like a good greasy stick? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm good with that. A greasy stick, a greasy wheel, any of that. I'm totally game.
The spoke is a kind of stick, even.
Ooh, greasy spoke. Yeah. How about a fulcrum?
All right.
Just answer the damn question.
I forgot what it was.
Were you helpful or hurtful during all
this? Oh, yeah.
Are you the kind of guy that gets up and screams and goes?
No, I really did try to be a peacemaker here. I figured that there were things that needed to be advocated for, but shouting doesn't help anybody.
Right.
So just try to, you know, you understand you're in a room full of really smart people with really good reasons to believe what they do. So try to facilitate that. And don't stick for something to be, you know, just because I think something needs to be number 5. I might have to learn to settle for being at 95.
You have to calculate the factor that a lot of those smart people occasionally do have absolutely atrocious tastes.
That does happen.
Justin Davis drinks milk with dinner.
Yeah, so there you go. And he runs features for IGN, so anyone can be anything when they grow up. Love you, Justin.
So we got 3 days of these. We get anything. I've got the whole list here, and we can do anything 41 or below because we're three. If through the magic of time warps, even though we're talking on Tuesday, they're hearing this on Wednesday.
So we're trickling these out 20 per day. So by Friday, you'll know what the number one game is.
Right,
but
which that number one game
is Karnov.
Yeah, it is Karnov.
It's the Nintendo Entertainment System.
The titular Karnov.
Which is what happens when a guy that looks like the Iron Sheik has to throw rocks at pterodactyls. Number one game. A lot of really good games on the list. Damn,
you
really.
Heard it here
so
first.
So what we're getting at here is we're doing as of this episode going up, the numbers 100 through 41 are up.
And we've got a bunch of PlayStation 1s from that section we can talk about.
Are these in order?
These are from lowest to highest. So they're at the bottom is the highest.
So you're going
to
confirm
from the top to the bottom.
These are PlayStation exclusives or games that kind of launched or are associated with PlayStation.
Yeah.
Sort of the way we do our Essential 50, right?
Right. So some of the ones here. Eco. It's down there, I think, in the 90s. Eco.
90s. That just shows you how insane this list is, though, right? Because Eco is a lot of people's, you know, top 10 games.
Yeah.
It's one of the most cherished games of all times. And for us, IGN, we roll in there, we just take the shovel, throw it down at the 90s.
But it didn't get shoveled, man. Again, it's the number of ways these moved up and down. The number of incredible, worthy to be on the top 100 list games that are not on this list.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and what's,
just
what's the next one we got here?
Okay, so we got Eco. I'm going to skip that next one. Go to Resident Evil 2.
Right, which is like, how do you compare these games?
What,
you know?
Eco and Resident Evil 2?
Yeah.
Well, one of them
they both kind of have tank controls.
I mean, yeah, one of them both have tank controls. Apples and oranges.
Both have terrible combat.
Is Solitaire on the list?
Solitaire? No, Solitaire.
Not on this one, but I mean, like, do we know if that's... can we spoil
that? On the top
that?
100? Yeah, we can spoil Solitaire and Minesweeper, not included on the list.
Wow.
I feel like that's a really... Like, I mean, obviously we're going for, like, video games, gamer games, games that gamers like to game with, but, like... I feel like Solitaire should be on that list. It's probably the most played video game ever, you know?
Yeah.
Were you not in the meeting?
I was in some of the meetings. I had one meeting where I was basically just, I was literally huddled in the corner.
Was Solitaire?
Because it was just too much. I was not having it that day. And everyone was just shouting at each other over which was better, Metal Gear Solid 2 or 3.
Yeah.
I'm like, just don't open that door.
Yeah. I don't think
we opened it.
I don't think I ever raised my voice. I might have. I don't know. Maybe it happened. I don't remember.
Oh, I very much. I'm the very opposite of you in those meetings. Yeah. I get up and I scream and I curse a lot.
No, I just.
I mean, I do that when I'm making breakfast.
Too. That's true. I was gonna say making love.
Damn general. Toast.
Yeah.
When you're just walking for no reason.
Just walking and shake my head.
But yeah, RE2 and Eco. How do you compare them? I don't know. The zombies.
What I'm shocked about is that Final Fantasy VII is as high on the list. As it is.
Yeah, that's
because, is it high or low?
That's
low,
because
low.
Oh, really? Low? Oh, I see. I mean, on my list, Final Fantasy VII would not have made the list.
It's not in your top 100?
No, it's not. And
where did we put it?
But we put it at, I can give you an exact number.
Oh, you have the full, you have the full 100.
Here. Yeah, I've got them all here.
A very astute Podcast 80. Beyond viewers 80. Can zoom in on this video.
You know who's going to be mad? 80. You know who's going to be mad about that?
What's that?
A lot of people. A lot of people are going to be mad about that.
Well, yeah. About it being that low?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Final Fantasy VII is a very important game that's not actually all that good.
Let me ask you this then, in terms of criteria, which I'm sure a lot of wheels are spinning on. Where do you guys bring into the argument of how good it was at the time versus how well it's held up?
Well, the way the meetings were structured, it was supposed to be how good it was at the time generally trumped how it's held up, and then the historical value was also part. It was all part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But how much fun you had with it at the time was number one. My problem is that I'm an old stick in the mud, and I played Seven.
Yeah.
And I had been playing Western RPGs, and I'd even some more primitive Japanese RPGs, and I was like, Final Fantasy VI blows this away. It's really pretty.
Because I feel like
Six was a better game.
If you were to do, you know, the top 100 songs of all time, top 100 books of all time, top 100 films of all time,
yeah,
you could look at the very, very old ones, and I don't know where something like Final Fantasy would sit in the sort of comparative of like old films. It wouldn't be like a silent film, but it wouldn't be, you know, it would be kind of like. Like where was that? Probably like an 80s movie.
Final Fantasy.
Like the special effects are okay. Maybe like a 70s movie.
I think Final Fantasy VII fits in with something like maybe Star Trek I, where the effects are incredible,
right.
But the story's trash.
Okay, okay. But I feel like when you go and watch the 100 greatest movies of all time, almost all of them are still watchable, right? Same with like the 100 best books of all time.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of games that have very specifically not held up very well at all, and we've seen them get remade a lot. Like I actually don't think the original Resident Evil or even Resident Evil 2 holds up especially well.
Mm-hmm. I liked the remake they did this year, the HD remake that they
The remake of remake
Of RE1. Yeah, the remake of remake. I really liked that.
Well, so that was like to me that was streamlining something that was already really streamlined in the mid 2000s when they remade that game.
I agree.
But I don't know. I think like games are one of the only things that like you go back and play the really old ones and some of them just are simply unplayable, whereas like old movies, old books,
they don't.
The difference there is interactivity, you know, and it's also visuals to a certain degree. But I think what's interesting, we're also looking at PlayStation stuff, and that's pretty much always been, you know, 3D polygon stuff, which there's a lot of really bad things that we're just trying to make the best of 3D rendering technology.
Yep. Yep.
Just kind of being like, this is what looks better futuristically, looks newer, but doesn't really age well at all.
Yeah, I'm looking for like a garage shading like renaissance to come along, kind of like the sprite art thing did. Like games that look like Mario 64 suddenly start appearing by indie developers.
But they look ready HD. For them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're kind of there.
Yeah.
That's what that cool dog game looks
cool
like.
Cool dog game looks like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, there's a ton
I really want to play this cool dog game.
A ton of indie stuff that's kind of got that coming along. It's just sort of, I mean, that's low poly. You know,
And there's something really gorgeous about that. And I don't know if it's a style choice or if it's just because I grew up with games like Metal Gear and I can look at them and be like, oh man, that had like this very crisp, unique look to it. But PlayStation games specifically, like you were saying, Max, they were very kind of jagged back then.
Yeah.
N64 took this like Vaseline blur fog and rubbed it all over everything.
Yeah, right.
Kind of
the texture catch was so awful on the
N64. Yeah.
Well, a lot of PlayStation games, I mean, a lot of them that we remember that are 3D are ones that have incredible art direction, you know, and it becomes in the same way that pixel-based stuff is a certain form of iconography, the same thing is when that's actually translated well to, I mean, you look at something like, something like GoldenEye, you know, like I think anything that strives for straight realism is going to be the most horrifying stuff. And Metal Gear Solid, which is the highest rated game on this list that we're covering so far.
Right,
do you know what number Metal Gear Solid is?
41, sir.
Okay.
Number 41, Metal Gear Solid.
And this is the original
Metal Gear Solid for the PlayStation.
I mean, that's a testament to the art direction of that game.
Right, but consider, I agree. And then, but then you have situations where you got things like, you know, I'm going to go to my old chestnut here, Suikoden 2, where it's practically sprite art all the way through. You know, most of that game is sprite art.
Mm-hmm. And, which we did see a lot of the, early on PlayStation.
And that's the only thing on here that's...
What, sprite art? I think Suikoden 2 is probably the only one on this particular list. That,
you know what I want to point out is so far we've got Eco, Vice City, RE2, FF7. We went over this already. There is one game here. No, two games here. Last of Us and Eco that are not sequels in some sense. I guess Tony Hawk. Is that Tony Hawk number one that they're counting?
No, actually, that's Tony Hawk. I have to look at the list. Either two or three. I don't remember.
Yeah. Exactly.
No,
that
you're right.
Is one of the weirdest things about games is that they are an iterative medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. All of these came from a previous version. They're refinements of some sort.
I see The Last of Us here.
Yeah.
So that means we can reveal that The Last of Us is not in the top 40,
No,
right?
The Last of Us is not in the top 40.
Interesting. So where does The Last of Us sit?
The Last of Us is number 48, sits right next to Uncharted at number... Uncharted 2 is 47, Last of Us is 48.
That was IGN's Game of the Year it came out. Mm-hmm. A lot of people played it for the first time when it was remastered for PS4. Mostly, I would say it's a lot of people's favorite Naughty Dog games. It's some people's favorite PlayStation game.
Sure.
I know it was my favorite PlayStation game for a while.
Absolutely.
And we're like, nah, there's what, 48, 47 games better than you?
That are better than that, according to our... Again, this is an amalgamation, a group of people coming together. But I mean, that's
same with Uncharted 2.
But being number 48 on a list like this, or Uncharted 2, you know, we're talking about the best of the best of the best of the best. I mean, at this point, we're in Dream Team territory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're like, there's no Christian Laettner on this team, you know, everybody's a real pro. Mm-hmm. And that's the especially we get up into these 50s and 40s. I mean, you're sitting next to things like Persona 4 Golden. You got Burnout 3 there, Final Fantasy Tactics.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because this is voted by people at IGN who are – this is the game we pay attention to all the games. You know, we are people who are very close to this because we work in this industry. This, if you asked a person on the street to pick the best games ever, you know, you're going to get an entire
completely
a person on the street name 100 different games.
But ask the person on the street, do what we did, get everybody together and make a list of hundreds,
Solitaire.
Put them in front of our eyes, because this is how it worked. You know, we had to go through that giant list everybody'd made one by one and talk about every one of them.
It's
and
kind of a good challenge, right?
Yeah.
It's to sort of ask people to get together with their friends, your gamer friends, wherever they are, and just come up with come up with your top 10 games of all time that the three or four of you or whatever, two of you agree on. It is nearly impossible. And then you double that in amount of people times five. You know, we had 25 people working
on this. And we sound so grumpy about it, but it was actually so much fun.
Now it's cool.
I had a ball with it.
What I love is that we've got these kind of remaining 40.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like when someone asks you to name the 50 states. And some people can do that. Some people can just fire off like 50 states like that. But some people also are going to be like, New York, California. And it kind of slows to a roll.
Kansas.
And they're always going to forget Delaware or something, or Maine. You know, it's – and then
– poor
in
Maine.
This case, it's like, you know that like there's going to be a Zelda or two on that remaining 40. There's probably going to be a Street Fighter or two. You know, there's going to be some stuff that – like you know it's there. You could probably think of it. You could probably guess it. But there's also going to be those like handful of things that you either go, really?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, huh? Or like, I've never heard of that. Like Arkansas.
And when it comes to that, I've never heard of that, go back and play them. There are ways to play almost every game on this list.
It's good that we...
Is that true?
Almost everything here, there's some way to get your hands on it. There's a few that are real pain. Like Galaga, for example, is a real pain. Because to play Galaga right, you've got to play it on an arcade cabinet.
Right.
Playing it in emulation is not the same. It's just
But I feel like finding a... like I was in Portland a couple weeks ago, and I think I saw three Galaga cabinets, which is more than I can say for, you know, Eco before the collection came out a few
exactly.
years ago. That game was impossible to play.
And there's still a few here that are really hard to get, but thanks to things like Good Old Games, for example, or the fact that Virtual Console came along, or the PSN, or there's so many ways to play. Go back to Suikoden 2, you can play it now. You can play a lot of these. Final Fantasy Tactics you can play on handheld. That's another great one. So what a fabulous activity putting that together was.
What a wonderful social experiment that we've now launched upon our gigantic audience to throw stones at us for.
Oh boy.
Was there anything that personally incensed you out of all of these? You're just like, no, that doesn't belong
there. Having seen the top 10, which I won't spoil.
Oh well, yeah, we can't talk about
that. There was
a
couple things that were like really not – so the thing was like sort of picking – and I think Games Radar did their version of this recently or something like that. And I think they decided to only pick one game from each franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked some stuff in the top 10 that was not the game in that series that I would have picked.
Okay.
That I would have kicked into like the 20s or 30s, but mm-hmm. we made it, you know, top 10. So that kind of stuff gets a little infuriating. It's weird to see like Uncharted 2 as like one of the most beloved PlayStation games of all time mm-hmm. is pretty low on the list.
Yeah, so there, you know?
We can guess that 1 or 3 isn't above it because 1 or 3 is
not
pretty,
above it.
Yeah, pretty much most people agree that 2 is the best of the 3.
So that's one that stood out for you. Max, what about you?
What about me?
I don't know anything that you're just like, "Ugh, I can't figure that one out. Why is that there?"
I guess I was just sort of as a control group, as a bunch of test subjects for this. I think it's kind of we're not biased because that's not how that works. But we're critiquing and reviewing things. I just think that video games to be ranked of all time is different from film. It's different from books. Yeah. It's different from music. I have the same issue with review scores. I think it comes down to what is a game. You know, mm-hmm. like the fact that we have. You could have Solitaire on the same list as The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that Tetris is probably going to be on there. Why not Solitaire?
I have played more hours of Solitaire on my PC than I've played hours of The Last of Us.
There you go. Exactly.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. I also, when I was living in Japan, Minesweeper was released on the TurboGrafx-16 as a CD.
Really?
It was nothing but Minesweeper, like the Windows-y version of Minesweeper. For play on a CD system.
That's really very strange.
Yeah, I kept that disc forever.
Well, I mean, I yelled this out in the group at some point, but I was like, you know, playing a game for a long amount of time doesn't mean it's a great game. It just means that you played it for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things you do that are not very good, but you do them all the time. You brush your teeth for 5 minutes a day.
It's also the fact that most people get into games because somebody hands them one, and that person handing them one usually isn't digging too hard to find out what that game is.
Yeah.
Do you think you get a copy of Alfred Chicken as a kid?
Oh, you're
like,
you just
hey,
play
it's
it.
A video game, and you play mm-hmm. it. Like,
well, you don't realize it sucks until you grow up and other people remind you of that. You
that's
know?
True.
Like, I had a lot of games growing up on the NES and the PlayStation.
Home Alone 2.
Yeah. Where you're like, well, this is a great gift, and I played the hell out of it for 100 hours, and I go to, you know, a couple years later, you're like, you read an article somewhere, the 10 worst PlayStation games of all time, and it's like, what?
But sometimes you knew. I mean, somebody brought you Master Chew and the Drunkard Who. You knew that was crap.
Colin and I used to share this one, but Deadly Towers was.
Oh, yeah, I played the crap out of Deadly Towers.
Yeah.
I really still enjoy Deadly Towers.
Oh, fuck, I hate that game.
I do. I like Deadly Towers.
You gotta fight those balls.
No, you stab a lot of balls. You use your greasy rod or whatever it was to stab the balls.
So, do you guys think this would make more sense if it was broken down by generation? Like, I feel like that's an easier way to sort of...
No, I like
then you
the
can go, here's what everybody was making on the NES. Here's the Super NES, PlayStation, N64, all that stuff like that.
No, I want a big sloppy list like this because it's way more fun to argue about.
Well, luckily, your wish has come true.
With your friends.
Yeah, it's a big old sloppy
list. IGN.com.
Yeah.
Number one source for sloppy lists. But seriously, get together with your friends and come up with a top 10 and let us know what you come up with.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
So, things to talk about that are more new and timely. Brian, you went to Comic-Con in New York. John Eric Osborne asks, what was your favorite part of Comic-Con in New York City?
I think, like, and I've been saying this for years, and we all kind of know this, but there's just this sort of growing realization that a lot of the things that we all grew up loving that were sort of like in the weird dark corners are now just front and center hanging out together. Like comic books for me growing up, and I'm sure it was the same for you guys, but you all had this kind of like dank, dingy little comic book shop in your town. And for me, it was this one that's like they sold model trains and like a couple like hobbyist things and a couple like Yankees pennants and stuff like that. And in the corner, they had just this little rack that had a couple Archie comics. And then the guy started getting one or two Spider-Mans and we bought them all. And then he started getting some X-Men and all this other stuff and Fantastic Fours. And we bought them all. And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, you guys like that? Well, they make cards too. Should I start ordering some of those for the store? And we'd order those, and then toys and all this stuff like that. And it was walking around seeing all the stuff that I grew up with. You know, all the old X-Men toys that I used to get, and all the old Marvel cards and all that stuff. And B, seeing that all that stuff is now, as we all know, you know, a multi-billion-dollar industry that, mm-hmm. that transcends games and movies and books and comics and everything like that. Comics are oddly the kind of the quietest part of all of that right now. But it's also like walking around with my friend, and my friend was like, there's girls here.
Ah,
and
there's
I'm like,
that.
Yeah, like they're like girls are into this stuff now. Like, it's not like, and I think it was part of it was that guys kind of opened the doors a little bit. And the other part was that girls were kind of like, that there's really cool stories being told over there. And I think we started telling stories about girls too. It wasn't just, you know, a bunch of burly man dudes in their tights and spandex.
I love your sentimental, like geek store story. Like, yeah. Having the Yankees pendants and the one in our town, at least the one I remember best, what sold half Magic cards, like at Magic the Gathering cards, half NASCAR paraphernalia, and had an illegal casino in the back. Like slot machines in the back. Yeah. And poker
Which is
tables.
Like this sort of like, they used to be this kind of catch-all for nerd stuff, right? But on a much smaller basis. And that's exactly what Comic-Con is now.
Yeah.
Like I was walking around and I saw a guy dressed as Barf from Spaceballs, and I turned the corner and there's Colonel Sanders. And Colonel Sanders is now in a Marvel comic, so he's now canonical to that universe.
When did this happen?
That's just something they just did recently.
Okay.
Because why not?
Now, so to reel this in a little bit to games, because people are already mad at me in the comments for not reeling this anymore. Gaming also has a place at comic convention stuff.
Yeah.
We see this at New York, at San Diego Comic Con.
Yep.
We see, but it's odd because it always kind of keeps a little bit of a distance. You know, it's almost like comic shops and arcades had different cultures kind of in their formative years.
Yeah.
And
it's not
uncommon. But it's not common to see a kind of nerd shop that sells games and comics. Like, you'll see plenty of game shops, but, like, rarely is there kind of – you know, you'll see some – there are Street Fighter comics, there's Metal Gear comics, there's Halo comics, there's Borderlands comics.
Yep.
But, like, it's unusual that they'd be like, hey, here's a boxed copy of Yoshi's Island or whatever behind the counter alongside the rare Japanese figures.
Yeah, I think video games at comic book conventions always feel like a friend that got invited once the party's going already, where we're just like, oh, this is really cool. We should invite, you know, Bob over here. And Bob's like, oh, yeah, I got some cool stuff to bring over to the house. I have all these wonderful snacks. But there was, you know, Capcom was there. Square Enix had a dedicated area. There was a couple other sections. Like, I got to check out – I took a private demo of Lego Avengers, which is just like, man, they are having so much fun making that game. Like, that is just going to be an awesome couch co-op game. They're going all in with both Avengers films, some of the spin-off films, and even some of the TV stuff. But the cool thing is that they're just – I think that they're one of the few companies that gets requests from fans and go, okay. Like, people are like, can you make Squirrel Girl? And they're like, sure. How about we give her own, like, Iron Man mech suit, too?
Squirrel Girl's in Avengers?
Yeah.
Oh, for Lego Avengers?
She was in Lego Marvel Heroes, too.
Was she in Lego Marvel? I didn't realize that.
So they also super overpowered.
Okay. Yeah. Well, she should be. She's Squirrel Girl.
So, like, they put Stan Lee in this one, and Stan Lee also has, a Hulkbuster-style mech suit that he can get into, but it looks like the desk that he used to write on. So it's basically, like, this old man in this pop-up mech desk with a huge pencil over his shoulder and a typewriter inside the cockpit, and then there's a little dingy old, like, 1950s desk lamp.
That's so cool. Somewhere there's a little Lego Jack Kirby standing in the corner looking really sad?
I think they're working on that.
Okay.
Yeah, they should. But they're just having a lot of fun with it.
So this one's interesting. Like, Lego Marvel Heroes, I played so much of that game. I fell in love with that game really hard. And part of that was because this is one of those, like, I feel so stupid for this. You know, you buy little figures when you unlock them, you pick up all those little studs and stuff. And as you get through the game, you get those, you get multipliers.
Right.
And you go into the menu to turn on the multipliers so that you get, like, oh, instead of getting, you know, 500 studs, I get 1,000 or 5,000 or whatever.
Don't tell me.
I was hitting the wrong button to apply changes, and I never really thought too hard about the math as it was happening. And then after, I think, like, 30 hours in that game or something, I was like, I've been doing this wrong the whole time.
Oh, man. Wow. That's the whole – so the whole point of those games is basically going in, collecting all the studs to get true Avenger or true Jedi or true hero, whatever you're playing.
Right,
And the studs multiply for that. So basically, if you get, like, three or four of those red bricks that are all times two, times four, times six, times 10, you can go in and basically, like, walk into a level, touch the first stud, and all of a sudden it's like, you got true Avenger within half a second.
Right.
Unless you're max, and then you grind and grind.
It was really embarrassing that I poured hours into this children's game and then have an adult man's grasp of mathematics realize that I was playing it incredibly wrong.
You miss things sometimes.
You screw stuff up, you know?
The first 3 days I was playing the Dark Souls 2 before it came out, when I was working on it for guides, I accidentally switched the game into hard mode. for Dark Souls, and I had no idea that I'd done it.
Oh boy!
And I, because the game wasn't out, there was no way for me to know.
Right.
So
right.
I was just like, "Wow, they amped up the difficulty so much." No, I'm just stupid.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people listening to the show probably have stories like that.
I think so too.
Send them into
us. Please do.
Beyond@ign.com.
Brian, you were talking about. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. You were talking about Avengers. Is it mostly, you talked about the guys showing up at the show with the games? Is it mostly comic book themed and TV themed games, or are there things outside of that too?
Yes and no. I think that's a good way to like shoehorn and get yourself on the show floor.
Okay.
But then again, like I said before, you know, the comic book conventions are really just bigger versions of the weird little shops.
They're pop culture conventions.
So yeah, you get all this weird stuff there too. But these guys specifically invited me to like a little offsite thing where I got to check out the game. One of the cool things is that there's open world stuff in between the levels, and one of them is like Mark Ruffalo's family farm. From the Age of Ultron.
Wait, okay. Jeremy Renner's?
Yeah. Or yeah. Jeremy Renner's farm. Like, wait, that's right.
What? So they got a little, what's her face from Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah.
Linda Cardellini is in there.
And she's like, don't go. But you bring all your characters there and you can unlock them there and like have them do cool stunts and collect stuff and then go back into the regular levels. So it's really cool. That's definitely one of the coolest games I saw there. I also got a very private, very awesome, like 40-minute demo of Just Cause 3.
Oh.
Which they are. I got to say, and I keep saying this, they're absolutely kind of sending off to die by putting it out in the first week of December.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, that's when a lot of people have already made their purchasing decisions.
Yeah.
Maybe if you've beaten another game and you want to trade it in and get it by then, or it's you do that's your GameStop buck, mm-hmm. you know, Christmas card thing, you want a game to pick up January 1st. But I would be totally okay if they move this game like a month or two, because coming 2 weeks after Fallout, it's just kind of like, man, especially Metal Gear, there's so many open world games that we've gotten.
That's mm-hmm. what Far Cry did.
Yeah.
Far Cry 3 did that. It came out, you know, December, Jay-Z's birthday, December 4th. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always remember that. It's always almost, oh, Jay-Z, happy birthday, Jay-Z. Far Cry 3 is out.
I think it's one of his songs.
Yeah.
So how is it? How
so it's really cool. You're basically in this fake southern Mediterranean town that was kind of like the south of France. And it's kind of like, you know, I stayed in Nice when I went to my honeymoon, and I was kind of geeking out because I was just like, is this where you guys made this? And they're like, yeah, I was kind of inspired by that, which means they probably got to take some cool vacation and go check it out. But you play as Rico again, and you basically go in and take over these outposts, kind of Far Cry style. But there's a lot of really cool nods to other video games in there. Like when you take over an outpost, and you can like pull down statues and stuff like that, like, you know, the war in Iraq and other fun things kids love. using their new system of these basically like hookshot pivot points. So basically the way that works is that I could take one pivot and it shoots a rope out to the left wall over here, shoot another one out to the right and shoot the center one to max, and then another one to the other side over there, clip that rope, and all of a sudden I've created a Max Scoville slingshot. And I just shoot you 100 miles into the air. And I can just do that for fun. There's also airdrops that are like Metal Gear, but a lot faster and kind of funnier, because they drop in this like shipping crate that has a, you know, a whole bunch of bombs and rockets in the trunk, and it just falls out of the sky and you see the crate fall open, then you get into it and drive off and you're like, all right, this is really cool. So when you take over a town, a flag pops up on a flagpole and fireworks go up in the air, and they were like, remember like in Mario Brothers? And I'm like, oh, that's a really cool nod. So you also get proximity mines and remote mines, which are awesome. You can throw them anywhere you want, and they look like the proximity mines or remote mines in GoldenEye.
Oh.
Which I was just like, I called them out on it. I'm like, those look like the ones from GoldenEye. And they're like, yes. And I'm wow. Oh, nice. Good nod. So the main thing about this game is that they noticed that a lot of people on the PC version were adding modifiers like crazy. Kind of like the way Max and I were playing GTA, and you were too, mm-hmm. for a while. Like, you know, making Flying Monkey Mountain, like underwater cities and stuff like that. So their level upgrade system sort of works like mods. Like, they're actually called mods in the game. So you basically can, like, tweak out every single thing in the game to almost, like, broken levels of weirdness.
So you can alter reality as you level up.
Yeah, and they're just sort of like, we want to make a video game. Like, we don't want to, like, everybody else makes kind of really serious games, and we you know, ours has some serious stuff, but...
Well, Just Cause has always kind of walked that line. Always, my friend would call it Just Cause, which I think is just really, really dead on.
Yeah.
That's kind of everything I want in life.
Yeah, like, and so the last thing I really loved about it is traversal in the game is really smart. You can basically go from full speed running to jump in the air to wingsuit, which will just pop you up in the air. And if like you're hovering a little bit and you're like, I need to get up that hill up there, then you go into parachute, and your parachute immediately gives you like a 50-foot lift up in the air, which will let you glide down. That you now turn into wingsuit and try flying around. So it's basically like having like just a helicopter inside your body at all times.
So it's sounds kind gross. Kind of an Arkham Knight, Gliden type of thing.
So I played that. I played Tomb Raider. It was just a more concise, kind of tighter version of the demo that you and I played at PAX, Max. And that's the weird thing about New York Comic Con is that it's at the tail end of all the cons throughout the year. So it's very rare that you get to see a bunch of new stuff. Tomb Raider looks good. I saw some of the currency stuff, which I hadn't really seen before.
Yeah, there like 400 microtransactions?
Yeah, so that's the kind of sketchy thing that I'm not... to me, it feels weird. It's like I'm okay with them putting microtransactions in a game if they're optional and they're for wussy babies who aren't good at video games. And they, seriously. And you want to buy your way out? That's fine.
See, I have a problem with that.
Actually don't. I think it's like if you get home from work and you're tired and you just want to beat a video game and you want to put everything up on the easiest. Like even the new Uncharted collection has this mode in it that's basically just like easy baby mode. And it's like for those who just want to see the fun adventure. Go by and not really have to do anything.
I have no problem with that. I just don't want to pay extra for it.
Well, you don't. Oh, okay. So yeah. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, Dragon Quest is built on that whole principle. If you play enough Dragon Quest, you'll eventually succeed because you keep your gold or you keep half your gold and all your experience. So you'll soon. I love being able to just power through a game. I think people should be able to do that in all kinds of games. I just don't want to pay extra for it.
Sure. Okay. I totally agree.
Paywalling that is just dangerous.
That's okay. I'm with you guys there then.
That's a free to play model.
And finally, the last game I played, which I don't really know. What to say?
Hold on. Let's back this up for a second.
Yeah.
So Tomb Raider's got microtransactions on Xbox and Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Just recently, we saw Square Enix had this weird Kickstarter-esque kind of pre-order structure for Deus Ex.
Which they canceled.
Yeah. Because everyone kicked and screamed and stomped their feet and made a big, big mess about it.
Yeah.
PlayStation isn't going to see Tomb Raider for another year. Do you think there's any chance that we're going to see that get pulled out if people are pissed off enough about it?
Oh,
or is
man.
It one of those things that it's like going to make money and you can ignore it if you want?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Screw it, you know, like because people really like.
Well, either that or there's a lot of baby wussy babies on Xbox that just give these guys billions of dollars and they go, "Wow, you really sent us a great message," you know, and then they turn around and they double down on that stuff on PS4. Hmm. But I have a feeling. All in all, by the time this game comes to PlayStation 4, it'll be that, you know, that season pass game of the year version that has everything in it and all the bad stuff stripped out or streamlined. So, I mean, reviewers will let these guys know in a couple of weeks when this game comes out. But otherwise, like, I'm really excited about it. It's easy to harp on the negative, but it's so gorgeous. It's so much fun. Mm-hmm. It was actually very jarring to play this and then go back and play Uncharted 2, which I think is like a classic, but I feel like Tomb Raider is doing a lot of stuff better than the Uncharted games. We get that back and forth volley with Uncharted 4 next year. We'll get to see who's doing what where. But I really like the mix in Tomb Raider of the sort of scripted stuff, which happens like, you know, thing collapses and all of a sudden Lara's on this downhill, you know, jam and she's shooting people and all this stuff like that versus the sort of temple tomb raiding puzzle stuff. And I think that when the Lara Croft games open up, they actually become way more open world than the Uncharted games get to. We'll see if that changes. The Uncharted 4 demo we saw at E3 was like pretty much this like crazy Jeep scene where you could take so many different paths. So if that's indicative of the rest of the game and it's kind of opens up, then this is like a cool kind of back and forth these guys are having that they're both sort of like, we can be more open. And like, no, we can. Because I think ultimately I don't really want that highly scripted, you know, drive down the road type of experience. Yeah.
I want a little bit of wiggle room, a little bit of sort of like Resident Evil 4, Metroid Prime, upgrade your weapons and get new areas that you haven't been to yet, that kind of stuff.
So still hyped on Tomb Raider. I'm going to try and beat it before Fallout comes out and ruins all of our lives. But
that's fair.
Finally, I want to talk about this one real quick because a lot of people were really bummed out about this happening. Umbrella Corps, which is not Resident Evil 7, which is a first person – no, it's a third person basically – it's Rainbow Six with some zombies in the levels. And I don't really know how I feel about that yet. I had an interesting experience. I played about six rounds at Comic-Con. I lost four and a half of them, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Got my ass kicked. And I think it's because a lot of the time I was thinking, this is a game where I have to kill zombies. Because it says, you know, it's a Resident Evil. It has a Resident Evil umbrella logo.
Yeah.
You're not really supposed to kill zombies in this game, or at least the maps that I was on. It's really more about getting to your team and killing the other team before they can kill you, which is a weird thing to think about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like everyone's in this war against zombies. They've infected this laboratory and presumably the rest of the outside world. But it's on you to kill a bunch of dudes.
So it's like a Rick versus Negan thing with a bunch of zombies in the middle.
100%. Okay. 100%. So you start off every match with this kind of like frequency jammer on your backpack that makes it so the zombies can't hear you or detect you. But the second you start firing shots and all that other stuff it's game on with them. So I was in a lot of situations where I was like, I can kill a guy right there by shooting him in the head, but it's going to alert these three zombies that are right next to me, and they're going to kill me instantly. Mm-hmm. Or I have like, you know, a few bullets before I reload. Do I shoot this zombie or try to run past him and kill this other guy? I think that eventually the game could get really interesting and really cool if they start pulling in other elements. And I was asking the Capcom rep in an interview about this. Like, if you guys start bringing in, like, dogs and Nemesis and stuff like that, and it's like Rainbow Six but with zombie dogs and like, lickers and all this other stuff jumping out of the ceiling, then, yeah, that could be really interesting and really cool.
Yeah, that sounds like a good like a good idea for a game is, like, a really, really tactical Resident Evil game that actually uses Resident Evil stuff. But when you're just sort of like, yeah, zombies – and dudes with guns.
Yeah.
Like, then you've got that same thing we had with, was it Raccoon City? Was that called?
Operation Raccoon City.
Which was just like
the first person one.
It was third person, but it was just like it was very like. I don't know. It was just a third person shooter type thing.
So like even that one had like herbs that you picked up that were like on the fly. I was like reloading. And you sprayed yourself. It was nothing like the old like roll a joint Resident Evils or whatever. Yeah. But this one didn't really have any of that stuff yet. And they told me like it's probably coming, but we'll see.
I like this idea because it sounds to me like it reintroduced tension to Resident Evil, which is something that's been sorely lacking. Obviously, I wasn't there to play it, so there's a lot of fine tuning in the way you're describing it. They haven't nailed it all down, but when I have to think about all kinds of things happening around me, when I can't shoot very often, when I have to evade, please just do something different with Resident Evil than what you've been doing for the last two games that made me want to cry when I thought about them.
I think the quickest way to actually add tension to something with good mechanics. I mean, the early Resident Evil stuff, it's kind of like, you know, that whole horror movie thing where you're like, no, don't go up the stairs, but it's because you're actually going up the stairs by accident. You know, you're controlling them.
Well, the old Resident Evil games were basically based on that fear you have when you're having a nightmare, but it's hard for you to physically move.
Yeah, but in this case, it's like people don't want that really, you know, it's kind of, that takes away from it. So, but if you add, you know, a multiplayer component, that kind of makes it so that it's, you know, it's actual survival.
Yeah. It's still that weird diagonal alternate universe where, like, Resident Evil is becoming more Call of Duty and becoming more action-y rather than the other alternate universe where everybody gets a bunch of really cool survival horror Resident Evils. And Resident Evil 4, second half of 4 and most of 5 kind of drew that split. But we'll see. I know a lot of people were really bummed about this game when it was announced because it's not Resident Evil 7. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that's still coming. This is sort of like a holdover. But it's right now it's not the worst thing in the world, but I'm kind of cautiously optimistic about what it becomes. Because if it goes full crazy Resident Evil, then sign me up.
That could be really cool. Okay, so one thing I want to talk about, Star Wars Battlefront.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The beta. That happened.
Yeah. Everyone in this room is a huge Star Wars fan, right?
We are. Yeah. 100%. Played that beta.
Let's bolt the door and spend the rest of our lives in here talking about how great those fine films are.
Yeah. Let's do that. Especially those fine films, the 4, the 5, the most of the 6.
Jedi's my favorite. Right?
Jedi's your favorite. Yeah.
I would say that people always get mad at me, but.
No, nobody should get angry with you about that.
Yeah. Now, Battlefront is without question the most genuine feeling Star Wars game I've ever played.
Yeah.
Like, wow. The sound design, the, like, walking alongside an AT-AT is just, like, nuts. Like, the feet crunching in the snow.
I'm so glad you said that about the sound design, because that blew me away, too.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
That, the John Williams score of, like, the kind of the more lesser-known, you know, B-side tracks.
Dude, there's a track from Shadows of the Empire in there.
Is that, like, from that?
Yeah.
Which
is probably what you remember it from.
I think it might be, because I also had the Empire Strikes Back soundtrack. I think it might be like a weird track from, like I said, the B-sides. Like it's the weird stuff maybe it's in a deleted scene or it's General Ryukin's talking over it or something. But yeah, like, it's got all these just wonderful, like, they got it so right in terms of the overall, I mean, the details, the minutiae, the kind of the background stuff, but I don't know how I feel about it in terms of, like,
actually playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
It's real fun. If it was a Battlefield game or a Call of Duty game or anything else, I probably wouldn't be playing it, and I'm playing it because it's Star Wars, and it's really good. It's so well made, but I don't think it's
like in a weird way, I don't know if it's scratching that Star Wars itch.
No, it almost feels like if somebody took a professional team and put them on making a Battlefield mod for Star Wars. Like almost like every now and then you download PC mods that were Star Wars oriented back in the day, and people would find ways to create stormtroopers or blasters or stick an X-Wing in the background. This is like a professional level version of that. And because of that incredible sound design and the visuals, you look at this, you know, just seeing the stormtrooper armor and the luster on it is perfect even. You know, everything's perfect to that. And it's a fine running around and shoot thing. I was having a wonderful time running around shooting stuff. And for me, that's enough. But I'm a terrible FPS player. And I don't know.
You can play it third person.
You can. I'm also a terrible third person shooter player.
So
I'm just terrible at video games.
You're bad at shooting the dudes.
Yeah,
huh?
Bad at shooting dudes. Really had a lot of fun running around. I'm Darth Vader. Woohoo! I can hold guys up in the air and do things. And there's AT-ATs and there's sounds. I don't know if it, I played a lot of Battlefront before this, and it's just something's missing spiritually there.
Man, that's how I felt. I feel like I'm the odd duck in this room. Like, okay, so here's the thing. One of the things I always appreciated about Star Wars that I feel like the prequels lost was that the combat was always sort of rudimentary. Mm-hmm. Like it was these guys with these sort of geriatric looking blasters. You had a couple of guys with laser sticks, and then you had a couple thermal detonators here and there. A couple little explosions went off. And to reduce that to a first person shooter to make it both simple and accessible is a really smart thing to do. Like they basically say you have these three attributes you can add. Yeah. You can have a thermal detonator, you can have this like backpack that will double as a shield, or you can have a jump button, or you can put another sort of explosive or different kind of blaster here. And I felt like so first of all, the three modes that were in there, the single player one, which is sort of like a kill wave after wave thing.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting, nothing sort of a time waster, you know?
Yeah.
There was the Hoth level, which was basically massive insanity, just overwhelming.
That was so good.
Yeah,
that's
great.
That's the juice. It's
20 on 20. But for me, Drop Zone was so much fun. I absolutely love playing Drop Zone, which is basically, it's like an 8v8, I think it's, or 7v7, whatever it is, 8v8, match where you're on that new planet that you
see, Sullust,
that you see for like a few seconds in one of the Force Awakens trailers. And basically, every few seconds or every few minutes, a pod drops from the sky, kind of like the ones that C-3PO and R2 came in on. And it lands, and you have to take it over and then protect it. And it's this very dynamic version of Capture the Flag. Now, just describing that sounds a little rudimentary and a little boring, but it's actually really fun because of the way that it's Rebels versus Stormtroopers. You don't really get to pick who you want to be. Mm-hmm. And you jump in there, and it's this absolute insane battle between these very intimate teams fighting over this one pivot point that one of them wins over, and then that disappears and another one drops in. And you try to capture, you know, four or five of them in a few minutes. And this mode really, really spoke to me. It just totally grabbed me. Hmm. And because of the diversity in way you can, you know, throw a detonator, you can shoot things up close. There's also people who can get kind of ion cannons from a distance. There's these pickups that you can get on the field that sort of flip it up a little bit. And then that jump, right? That jetpack.
Yeah.
Like watching a stormtrooper just jetpack in and start blasting you from above or doing that to somebody else was really, really fun to me.
Okay, I think you've got a good point there. I think that the Sullust situation, in particular Drop Zone, the map design's really good.
Yeah.
Even though it's a small map, there's a lot of places to hide, a lot of angles to come from, but it still allows rapid motion. It's a really carefully designed map. But both there and on Hoth, there was something – what I felt like was missing was that I never felt like I was doing anything special. I was in a world that's beautiful and wonderful, but part of Star Wars is feeling special. Now, being a hero and being all powerful, that was neat. But when I play like Battlefront 2 and you're playing like a fleet battle thing, you know, you're flying into an enemy ship to leap out, to take over control panel, to lower the shields so that your team could blow it and explode the whole thing. Whereupon in this game, I was defending escape pods and relay stations. Even when it came to attacking the AT-AT on Hoth, I'm really just standing at a point so that a Y-Wing I'm not controlling can fly in and lower a bar. And even though I realized that's all window dressing, I didn't feel like I was doing anything special.
So I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head. This feels like a really, really big budget mod. And if it's a mod that makes me care about the game, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. And like that's the thing is the beta was free. We got to play a free Star Wars game for a bunch of hours. And the game's going to come out and you know, we'll probably still all play it. And I think it's going to have that – I've said this before. I think it's going to have that Titanfall effect where it's a multiplayer-only game and everyone plays it for a bunch of time and plays the same maps over and over again and shoots each other a whole lot and probably racks up a dozen hours or so at least. Mm-hmm.
but walks away from it being like, that didn't feel like much time at all, you know? And it's like, right. Well, you got, if you'd been playing a campaign-based game that lasted the same amount of time, it wouldn't feel as repetitive.
Yeah, but I feel like we're and I've been doing this for a while with this game, but I'm coming around to it, but I think we're chastising this game for being something that it's not.
Right. Mm-hmm. No. Like, let me kind of hit on this further. There's a lot of stuff that if you modded Battlefront into being not a Star Wars game,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that wouldn't be that hard either. You know, like there's a lot of stuff in there that is just kind of an analog for Battlefield stuff, you know? Like mm-hmm. there's jets, there's helicopters, there's tanks, there's things that are, I mean, they're real life versions of the stuff that you're doing. What we don't have is, I was really hoping there'd be like dewbacks or wampas or just some kind of critters that are like.
I think there totally will be though. I mean,
yes,
I think there totally will be.
I think that they're just going to be.
I think that this game is going to sell 10 million copies. I think a bunch of people are going to sign up for the season pass and they are going to pump this thing with content for ages because that's what they did with the Battlefield games. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be treated very well. The fact that we got this mm-hmm. little slice of it for free over the weekend that was basically three different yeah. modes, all yeah. of which were completely different on completely different settings, and that we're going to get, you know, a dozen maps at launch and then plenty more planets down the line. I think we're going to see that. Like, I think this is going to be that huge mixtape of Star Wars stuff. Now, what it's never going to be is that sort of like, here's the story of a young moisture farmer taking over
the
galaxy.
We know that. But yeah. I don't want to be unfair to it. Again, it is a slice. We have to be careful there. And I want to be clear, if I had spent $60 for this, bought it, and got what I think I'm going to get out of the full game based on this impression,
mm-hmm.
I would feel like, yeah, I got a good game out of this. I mm-hmm. had fun.
Yeah.
But it's in a world where I can walk out and buy Metal Gear 5 or this, mm-hmm. I'm going to go buy Metal Gear 5. I guess that's it.
It's simple.
Yeah,
it's simple gameplay.
It's fun and cool and neat. And if you can afford to buy lots and lots of games, buy this. But
yeah.
if this is my one big Christmas present game, no, I want something else.
See, Metal Gear was the kind of game I would sit down and I would play for 7 hours straight and go, where did the time go? But Star Wars is, I feel like this is the kind of game where I can get in 30 minutes of rounds before work
mm-hmm.
or like get home. Like this morning
that's a good point.
This morning I saw a tweet that was like, the beta ends in 3 hours. And I scrambled out of bed and I ran in the mm-hmm. other room. My wife's asleep. And I turned on the coffee pot and I went in the other room and I turned it on and started playing immediately. The second it ended, I went to pre-order the season pass. Like I was
really?
Just, yeah. I'm like, I'm all in on this. I love the idea of it. I love the sound design of it. I love playing it. The graphics are great. I like that it's and people are going to hate me for this. I like that it's probably the first person shooter in a very long time that's kind of casual and kind of easy to get into, that doesn't feel like it's constantly punishing me for not being as good as everybody else. Now, in 3 months, when everyone's destroying me in this game, I might be playing a different flute. But right now,
that level cap helps. People can only get up to 5, so they can't out-perk you, out-equip you. You know, there's that the card system, which, by the way, this thing kind of neat.
Yeah.
One other thing I think we'd be remiss if we don't mention, the fighter combat sucks. The fighters are neat, but the fighters
the heroes
sucks. No, the A-wings, the TIE mm-hmm. fighters.
Oh yeah, so I wasn't.
The fighter combat is
awful. It's a battlefield.
I'm not wild about the vehicles.
But this
in there.
Is Star Wars, so that's not okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what else bugs me about that? Like a lot is the fact that they're not vehicles as much as they are like pickups, like power ups.
Yeah,
like, you like just crouch down and you like get in your little pose and then suddenly you're just in the ship.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're gonna change that, but like. I kind of want to be my little dude who, like, what's the point of having, like, a cosmetic version of yourself in the game, like your avatar, your rebel soldier, if you're not seeing yourself jump into your A-Wing?
Yeah. So like, do you want a thing where you're, like, running around Hoth and you see an A-Wing and you hop into it? Okay, I totally agree with that.
That'd be so cool if the new ship spawned regularly.
I'd love that.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with that.
But if you're going to give me atmospheric combat in a multiplayer game, it needs to be at least as competent as, say, Rogue Squadron, which was designed in the late 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, I need – it stunk. And this is Star Wars, and that's not okay.
Yeah.
I felt the same way piloting some of the vehicles. And also – I mean, I think a problem with it was that the tutorial is completely grayed out. But I think for most people, they're not going to go through that anyway. So your ships should just fly well. I thought controlling an AT-ST was awesome.
That was – no, like, the ground vehicles I was fine with.
Yeah.
You're right, it's the A-Wing, the TIE mm-hmm. Interceptor, the X-Wing. Those were what felt
– I kept getting into the A-Wings and flying directly into the AT-AT's head to try to knock it down because that worked on – every time I had extra lives to burn in Rogue Squadron, I would do that. And it just –
it didn't work.
It doesn't – it barely makes sense.
Well, that's because they non-canonically put shields on the AT-AT, which – and by the way, Imperial Star Destroyers are not lower atmosphere.
Well, there's
craft.
A lot
what
of
are
non-
they doing in the sky above
a lot of now? Non-canonical stuff happening in this game. Some of it I'm okay with, some of it I'm not. Hector Paul Bossa says, does it upset you that the Luke Skywalker in Star Wars Battlefront is not chronologically correct? And what he means by that is that you see the Jedi Luke Skywalker
yep.
on Hoth in his, you know, his black suit with he's already got the robot hand.
He's got
and
a green
like
lightsaber.
And the green lightsaber. And I think the main reason they did that is to keep him sort of well, I was thinking about this. Like, did they keep him separate from everything else that's going on and not just put him in Hoth gear? But then I remember that on Hoth, he was wearing an orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, well, he wears an orange jumpsuit before that. And he has the suit that he strips down to on Dagobah, the brown thing.
Yep.
But I think the real reason is my guess is because Vader shows up black and gets that white snow easy.
Yeah.
And black Luke shows up the same way in that way with that green saber and against that blue sky and the black outfit. He's just easier to spot, which equals things out for the
teams. You know what else is not canon is fighting against rebel troopers named the Juicy Balls 112.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Just, I mean, it's a multiplayer game. There's always going to be that level of. Thankfully, there weren't any teenagers shouting at each other on the headset mics.
This morning, I kept getting murdered by Da Bieber fan.
Oh, that guy?
Yeah,
he's
really good. He's really good at that game.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like I guess I'm hoping that, you know, I hope you're right, Brian. I hope that the season pass stuff. I hope that they like. Some of that season pass stuff is going to be Force Awakens stuff that's actually Force Awakens stuff, not just a planet that they're showing the battle that took place on previously.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like the second Force Awakens is out, it would not surprise me one bit if they were like, hey, so remember that movie that everyone just saw? Well, guess what we have coming out in a month and a half? You get to fly the new orange X-Wing.
Yep.
Get that Kylo Ren saber, kids.
There you go.
So, I mean, the vehicles were slightly problematic to me. I thought the gunplay was fantastic.
Oh, yes, the gunplay is great.
I thought, like, pulling off – there were times – and I haven't done this in a while, but there were times where I pull off something and want to drop the controller to clap and cheer.
Yeah.
Like, where I was just – because it was just this perfect moment of Star Wars where I'm looking in the – there's, you know, Star Destroyers and on the side. There's crashed TIE Fighters and X-Wings next to me. I'm in this heated battle with a Stormtrooper. The blasters are making the perfect noises. Mm-hmm. It was just like perfect moments of Star Wars. And then like you get shot and it kicks you to that like loading screen for a second. It says Da Bieber fan or whatever the hell it is. And it does kind of pull you out of it. I'll give you that.
But that turnaround is so sweet.
It's like, so
the
fast.
The fact that they're not like, oh, you're going to count down 12 seconds
because
you're bad at the game and you should be punished.
And that's why I love Drop Zone, because every time I got shot in the head, I'm like, I got to run back and protect this shit for my friends.
Yeah, it's technically impressive. The beta was I was really, really struck by it.
So we'll see. I mean, I'd love to check in with you guys in a few months and see if my, you know, $50 investment of the season pass has paid off. I've gone on record on the show numerous times to say that buying something preemptively before you know if it's going to be good, Batman especially, was a huge, huge problem for anyone to put that kind of money into it because it hasn't delivered yet. But Star Wars.
Yeah. You know what?
Has Phantom Menace taught you nothing?
I'm kind of hoping that my lowered expectations and sort of preemptive underwhelmed mist.
Mm-hmm.
I can't talk.
That was seven words.
That was not a word at all. That was underwhelmed nature.
Underwhelmed.
But yeah, like I hope that it makes me overwhelmed with how cool the game is when it's out. Like,
yeah.
I'll still play it. I'm still gonna play. It's the first new Star Wars game we've gotten in a while. I don't know. I mean, the beta is the beta. You know, what are you going to do? Let's hope they tweak some stuff and we get a Wampa in there.
November 17th, full version.
Coming up real soon. Okay. We got some quick picks. Is that what they're called?
Quick picks?
Rapid fires.
Quick picks. Rapid
quick picks.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fires. With Brondo Alfondo.
All right, let's get in there with real dark, real quick. Clyde Reeves Nawuski says, or Nawuksi. Asks, what's the saddest a video game has ever made you? Jared.
Oh, that wow, I got frozen. Gone Home.
That was going to be mine.
I played Gone Home. Oh, wow. I didn't mean to.
No.
I played Gone Home backwards by accident. You know, the brilliance of that game, people don't give enough credit for the way the level design is. You can approach that house from any angle. There's no scripting to force you to go one way or another. You can go in a lot. No, I don't know if you can go
to the window. You got to go through that porch.
Once you're inside, you get the idea. Once you're inside, you can go anywhere you want, and there's a lot of different paths that interlock. And all those paths tell stories when you're picking up the stuff together.
Yeah.
So I found the secret passage in the closet like a minute into the game by accident. So I took the house backwards from where they expect you to.
Now,
what that meant was I'm down in the basement and I found this book that this guy's so proud that he's written. It's like stored away in the basement.
Hold on. You gonna do that thing again where you talk about a game and you just spoil the hell out of the game for anybody who maybe hasn't played it?
No, but I'm going to spoil a tiny moment, and it's not going to spoil the game.
Okay.
I think this is fair. Is this too long a story? I can stop.
I don't know. Can you?
I've got to quick here. You find a book.
Tell us how much answer is yes.
Dad wrote this book, and the book is good. But you look inside, and it's a note from his father talking about how disappointed he is, wasting his life writing this crap. Whoa. And it says, "You can do better." At the bottom, "You can do better." His father writes that. 2 hours later, when I've almost finished the game, and I get upstairs, and I walk into the dad's study, and I've gotten to this whole family through reading all the crap around their house, and I walk into his study, and it was like somebody punched me in the stomach. Like, over his desk is a giant handwritten sign that says, "You can do better." And I realized that he'd gotten that note decades before. And here's this man whose whole life has been dominated by that one thought.
That's awesome.
And it's just – it molded who he is. And I teared up. I got sick a little. So that's mine. Gone home.
That's great. Yeah, I agree. Max, do you have one?
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid 2.
Really?
Yeah. So Metal Gear Solid has always been like one of my just most – like I've been thinking about it a lot lately just because I love Phantom Pain so much. And I honestly feel like it is a culmination of every game I've wanted at different stages in my life. Like from when I was in fifth grade and I was like checking checking weird military books out of the library, or when I was running around in my yard playing hide and seek, like – or when I was an adult and I was like, they really should cross Gundam with Kim Wilde. Metal Gear Solid 2 was a game – it was a game I played with my best friend who we bonded over games. He was my next door neighbor.
Yep.
I don't know if he listens to the show or not. Anyway, but we played the game a lot together. We played that Metal Gear Solid 2 demo disc for an entire summer. This is when I lived in Connecticut, and I just finished freshman year. We played that game backwards and forwards. We made smiley faces with the trank darts and the guards' faces. We made them hump each other. We kicked doors off lockers. Did all the stuff you did in that weird little tanker level thing. And then I moved out to California in about August. And moving from Connecticut, which is, you know, a state over from New York, to California, which is sort of disconnected from that, is a long big leap. And
you can find footage of that in the first 10 minutes of the hit film The Karate Kid.
Yeah, that's true.
You can learn all about
that. That's true. It was not dissimilar. It was me and my mom in our little compact car. We came across the country, and
you guys both had cool hair.
We moved to shut up.
Did you meet a small Japanese man that taught you the ways of martial arts?
No. We moved to town in California.
You dress as a shower for Halloween?
Shut up. A week after I moved to California, 9/11 happened.
Oh,
and now the thing is living in Connecticut, like friends' parents went to work in New York. Like it was right. Yeah. It's right there. You're from Jersey. You get this too. Like
I was in New York.
Yeah. It's an immediate thing. Mm-hmm. In California, it was sort of like this thing on TV. You know.
Yeah.
It was this weird distant thing. And meanwhile, I'm, mid-puberty and just everything's miserable because I'm the new kid and I'm chubby and I'm from out of town and I don't understand what the hell anything is. And I'm looking forward to Metal Gear Solid 2. That's all I want. I don't even have a PS2. And I make friends with this kid, Matt, and he's sort of like this – he's a friend who was in my homeroom class. And I went to his house one time and like – he's like, "What do you want to do?" I'm like, "Oh, we should rent a game or whatever." And I think I was more like, "Hey, can I come over to your house and rent a game?" Like, and he'd like just bought his PS2, and he's like, "I'm like, dude, Metal Gear Solid 2, you got to play this game." And so we rent Metal Gear Solid 2, and we pop it in, and I think I don't even remember what it was that just hit me. I think there was some boss fight or something, or we got in some stupid fight like the way a couple teenagers will when they get together, and I just broke down crying because it was like, this was a game that was like, it was what I did with my best friend. And I'm playing with this like, I'm excited to play this cool game about Solid Snake. And that's not Solid Snake. And I want to play this game with my best friend. And that's not my best friend. This is like, I wasn't mad that you're playing as Raiden. It was just kind of this like, everything came crashing down around this like, playing this game I'd been waiting for like years. You know, when I went to summer camp, I had that one issue of PSM that had the Metal Gear Solid 2 cover on it that was done by Joe Madera.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like this badass picture of Snake, and that's the magazine that reminded me I should like watch Escape from New York. Like that was,
right.
And I read that thing backwards and forwards. Like I should have been hiding in my bunk like reading a porno magazine because I was 14 or whatever. But instead, I was
in the game was, or in
no, and well, I guess you can also do that. You can go to the locker and kiss the posters.
Yep.
In there. Real sexy game. But no, like I was just obsessed with it, and I was really excited about it. And then it was like a lot of stuff was changing in my life at the same time, and I don't know, I broke down. Like, I was a mess. And my friend was like, are you okay? And I'm like, well, no, nothing is okay. Everything's kind of weird right now. You know, and the happy ending of that story is that the following summer, my best friend flew out to stay with me. He brought his PS2, and the first thing he did was just power through Metal Gear Solid 2.
Okay, that's great story.
And
awesome.
We made our file name Funky Chimp Sex. So when we beat the game...
A little less golden because of that.
And Snake's like... Who is this mysterious soldier? What is his name? And he throws dog tags down in the, you know, the halls of liberty or whatever the hell it is. And it's just this funky chimp sex. And we're just like, yeah, buddy. So I don't know. Yeah, it's a
all right.
Special series, man.
I don't even I got a lot of more. I'm not even asking more questions because that's pretty much the peak right there. If you still hate Max Scoville after that, you're statistically you're an asshole.
Or a snake eater fan.
Yeah,
one of the
or a funky chimp sexer. Man, thank you for that.
Yeah, sure.
That's
amazing. Yeah. One of these days I'll write something about how the Phantom Pain is just perfect, and I don't know what to do after that. On that note, let's wrap things up. It's very hot in here.
It is
very hot.
Very toasty.
Also wearing a jean jacket.
Yep.
I could remove my shirt and review my.
So that hot PlayStation passion in here.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm Max Scoville. Brian, you're Agent Bizzle.
That's right.
And Jared, you are Petty, Jared.
I am.
And if you would like to see the work that we're doing, Brian and I do Up at Noon.
That's right.
Every Thursday we do it live noon Pacific time. And then we break out little bits of that so you can catch it.
We have Adam Sessler on this week
for
the full episode.
Sessler is going to be on for the whole episode.
Which is really awesome.
Friday the 13th, the game.
I grew up watching him on TV. You did too. You also worked with him for a while.
Mm-hmm. I grew up sitting next to him while he ate his lunch.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. I don't know if that we've been growing up. It was like a few years
still
ago.
We're all still growing up.
The closest thing we have to an elder statesman, isn't he?
That's right. Max and I also do another podcast called The Comedy Button. It's about to hit its 4-year anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
200th
right.
episode. You can pretty much start anywhere on that show if you're looking for another fun podcast from us Dirty Boys. Jared's been on it before. Do you remember which episode number you were on?
I don't remember the episode number.
It was a couple weeks ago.
Just Google best Comedy Button episode.
You can do that.
Yep.
There you
go.
Find me there.
Yeah.
That's how you do.
Thanks,
Jared. What are you working on?
Yeah,
I'm doing a little bit of everything. I'm getting ready for Fallout to fall on my head. Mm-hmm. But we're working on some exciting Fallout things that I'm about ready to announce. I think I can announce it next week. News and some preview stuff and some feature stuff.
Do you have it?
What's that?
Do you have it?
No, I don't have it yet.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You lying to me?
I'm not lying to you. I would just be evasive if I had it. Mm-hmm. So no, we don't have it yet. But there is some cool IGN Fallout stuff coming out the pipeline that I don't think a lot of people have heard about yet.
Nice.
So coming out of the vault?
Coming out of the vault.
There
actually, that's more apt than you
would
might
you say
know.
it's going to be really? Totally rad?
One might say it's a vault IGN. Stay tuned. There's some neat stuff going on there. And outside of work, Angie's getting better. I spend a lot of times on the weekends just enjoying being able to do things like walk around. And that's good.
But when you're not walking, you're doing something I'm very envious of this month, which is you are watching 31 horror movies in 31 days.
Yeah, just for fun. I'm not like blogging about
so
it. I'm not making videos.
That.
I'm just doing it. And last night was Disney's Halloween Treat, which is the old – we do TV shows too sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I'm going over to Miller's tonight. I don't know what we're going to watch yet. We haven't decided. Just cool. For fun. Yeah. And
well, there we are. We didn't do Essential 50. We'll do that next time. There is a Beyond PS4 community called Podcast Beyond. There are 1,500 people in there. There is a 10,000 people cap. So if you want to join a PlayStation community on PSN, get in there.
Yeah, let's get more people in there. Apparently, you can't find it through searching, so that's difficult.
That's weird. I didn't know.
Yeah, I was asking for instructions on how to get in there. Smarter people than I have those instructions.
Close your eyes.
Sony, get it together. Yeah, just if you launch this stuff and then you can't just let people in there, it's a problem.
Yeah, plug a Kinect into your PS4 and shout at it.
Yeah, that's
try
right.
That.
Scream into your PlayStation eye.
Tap your heels together 3 times. Say, "There's no place like home."
Yeah. So it's a Podcast Beyond community. Go look for that. If you can't find it, the good old folks at the Podcast Beyond Facebook group will show you the way.
They will.
Beautiful.
That's right.
All right. On that note, Beyond.
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 Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.